This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's July 31st, 2019. Wow, look at that.
Yeah, so if you liked July, this is your last chance to get
into it. This is your last chance to have a good time in July.
Yes.
Anyway, until next July. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
That's me.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening live, you can call us right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email to bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. Ron's rant of the week. Are you ready for it? Yeah, we've been talking about the Tour de France. We've been talking about the Tour de France for quite some time now, since it is a 21-day stage race. So therefore, we obviously had a lot to talk about. This year, my rant, I'll get to the good part. My rant is Team Ineos, formerly Team Sky. I'm bored. Okay, this was the best Tour de France I have seen in possibly 2 or 3 decades. It was fabulous. It was exciting. It was just over the top. It was why I love bicycle racing. It was incredible to watch. It was incredible to follow. Team Ineos, or Sky, as they were known last year, they were without their major leader, which was Chris Froome. He was out because of an injury. So Chris Froome could not be in the Tour, so they handed the reins over to Geraint Thomas, and Geraint Thomas sat there. And then what Ineos did was they waited until the last 2 days, and then they surgically dismantled the Tour de France and gave themselves a lovely win, and not only first, but then second place, too. You know, why am I ranting about this? Because I had my hopes up that they weren't going to be able to pull this off, that the most powerful team, cycling team in the world, would fail at doing this. Why do we want to see the leader fail? Why do we want the underdog to win? And well, it's human nature. We definitely like to see this. So, anyway, what can I say? I'm disappointed. I knew deep down inside, I knew that it was not going to be won by anybody but them, because they are so, like I said, surgically good at how they do things. I'm just bored with surgically good. I went through 7 years of U.S. Postal and Discovery, or whatever they were when the big goofball L was there. And, you know, it's...
Goofball.
Yeah, I'm going to call him a goofball. You know, come at me. I don't care. I just really don't care.
That's barely scratching the surface.
It barely scratches the surface.
Goofball's not the word I'd use to describe him.
And you know what? I'm going to rant about something else, too, because while I'm here and I'm in rant land, what is with NBC Sports Network interviewing Lance Armstrong for the Tour de France?
Right, that was
what
really controversial.
What is going on there?
Yeah.
Why would they do that? Why?
Well,
bad call, guys.
This is
very bad call.
It's interesting because I can see both sides. I've looked at love from both sides now.
It's not love. Go ahead. What?
Okay, so both sides. On the one side, so me watching Lance Armstrong commentating made me uncomfortable,
yeah,
because he's a very controversial figure, obviously, and his deal is not just that he doped. It's that he lied about it vehemently, and he threw a lot of his cohorts under the bus. So that's it's not even – because there were some people who just doped. They got found out, and they were ashamed, and they lost their titles, like people like Floyd Landis and
right.
What was his – Tyler Hamilton?
Tyler Hamilton, yeah. The Andreos.
Right.
Frankie and
right.
Chris.
So they and so they doped, but they admitted it, and they didn't go after anybody. What Lance did was far worse than that. He doped, he lied about it, and he threw a lot of people under the bus.
Lance sued the Andreos. Lance sued Greg LeMond. Lance sued everybody. You know what? You know who else has this kind of behavior when they don't get their way?
The Orange Man.
Yeah, the current president of the United States.
That's right.
Anyway, you know, if you don't get your way, so what's the answer? You hire a bunch of lawyers to go and put financial strain and distress upon your critics. That is just not nice thing to do.
No, it's, what a narcissist does.
The man is Lance Armstrong is an ethical dilemma. That's what he is.
Oh,
he's
for
an
sure.
Absolute ethical dilemma.
He did some things.
And the
that
fact
were...
that NBC Sports gave him screen time, I'm upset with them.
So ethically, obviously, ethically, he's really got problems. What we don't know, so this is the thing, that this is a philosophical and almost and a spiritual dilemma here. When somebody does something really wrong, should they go to hell? And when I say go to hell, I mean by go to hell means they should be strung up, they should be lynched and should be never ever heard from again.
Right.
Or do you believe in the concept of teshuva? So in Jewish we have this concept of teshuva. And teshuva is where you've done something very bad or sort of bad or you know some degree of bad, and teshuva means to turn around, and you've turned it around. So Lance has talked about having therapy and being very sorry and trying to turn his life around. Do you think that he should be accorded teshuva? Should he be accorded forgiveness? So that's the question.
What's he doing for my sport? What's he doing for the sport that he took everything away
from? Well, he can't. He's been banned from it, so
I understand.
Do anything.
I understand.
He can't do anything. I don't know.
He could be doing CCAP.
Could he? I was just going to say that.
He could be, doing
other
things.
But I don't know if that's true. He may not be able to do CCAP.
Yeah.
Because CCAP is associated with
USA Cycling.
Yes.
You're right. Right.
So what is he doing for your sport? He's doing what he can do. All he can do is what he did. He can commentate. He's not banned
from
that.
Right, and he has a podcast, and I've listened to his podcast. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I'll listen to the podcast.
Right.
So
it's all about I was very uncomfortable watching him up there. I was like, why put somebody who's that controversial up there? They have nice Chris Horner on, and they had nice Christian Vandeveld. And of course they have Bob Roll, who was back in the day. And is Steve Scheinger a former racer as well?
Yeah.
So they have a lot of former racers who don't have such controversial histories.
Right.
Couldn't they have gotten somebody else? Even George Hincapie, for example.
Or maybe bring in one of the other guys like Floyd Landis or Tyler Hamilton or, some of these guys that got caught up in the mess. How about Greg LeMond? Hello.
Yeah.
What about Greg
LeMond? I don't know why. So it was uncomfortable to see Lance up there. So I guess it's all about whether you think he's done adequate teshuva and who are we to judge? He did some really bad stuff, and should he be banned? And because of that, should he be banned from benefiting from cycling in any way? So we don't know if he got paid to do what he did. If he didn't get paid, the thing is, the other piece is because of the things that he did. Is he credible? Because he was such heinous things.
Right.
Like I said, it's not just that he doped, because doping, unfortunately, was part of the culture. Everybody was doing it. And it's bad that they all
did
it.
And they probably still are.
And they were pressured. They were pressured to dope. But he did worse than that. He doped. He knowingly doped. He encouraged other people to dope. He lied about it. And he sued all those people. And he was unkind, to say the least, perhaps brutal on a lot of his cohorts. And that's the thing that he did wrong. I mean, Tyler Hamilton and Floyd Landis and others, they merely doped and they got caught and they were sorry about it. But this one, he carried it a lot further, and he was very cruel to a number of people.
Well, he lied and then he backed his lies with lawsuits.
Yes, he did. That's what he did.
That's the moral dilemma right here.
Right. So the question is,
if you're lying and you're lying and you know that this is going to hurt others for you to continue to ride this lie out, When he talked to Oprah,
he talked about how he was doing therapy and he was doing counseling and he was trying to turn his life around. And he is sort of, you know, when you talk about like, the, you know, the Scarlet Letter, right? The whole deal with the Scarlet Letter is, what's her name? Who's the main character in Scarlet Letter? Anyway, she had to wear the Scarlet Letter. She was banned from certain. She had to walk around wearing that Scarlet Letter. And over time, what happened in the end of, if you remember the end of the book, the Scarlet Letter, she embroidered upon it, and you almost couldn't recognize it as an A. And people went to her as a wise person, because, you know, she had done her time essentially. And do you feel like Lance has been adequately punished? And do you believe in the concept of teshuva? Do you believe in the concept that people can turn around and change and stop doing their evil deeds or their sins or whatever you want to call them? And do they get to come back?
I don't know. I listened to his podcasts. I listened to the interview on NBC Sports. There's just a level of arrogance that still has not.
Okay, but arrogance is kind of a sin, but it's not the same as it's kind of a what do you call it, a chait. It's a, you miss the mark. It's not as bad as going after, you know, threatening financial harm to your friends when they talked about the fact that you dope. That was a very, very, that's like a pesha. That's a bad thing to do.
Yeah.
And
yep.
So he could be just because he irritates you, that's not enough. I mean, a lot of people are irritated by you sometimes, and people are irritated by me. That doesn't mean you should be thrown out of clubs or off of shows or anywhere else. You know, just because you're irritating. If you do something bad though that hurts the organizations you're in, that's another story.
Right.
This is the issue here. How the thing is, he's trying to do teshuva, and he's not allowed to profit from cycling any way, anywhere. He's not like you said.
He can volunteer.
Could he? Right.
That's a question.
That's a question. Could he volunteer? Right. That is a good question. Was he paid for his time on NBC? That's something that would be interesting to know.
That would be very interesting.
Right. Because that would be him giving back to the sport of cycling. But again, my problem is, because he did all those things, is he credible? My feeling is like, if it were my party, I don't know if I, it's too uncomfortable. I would certainly go out to have a beer with him. I would too.
Quite honestly, I would love to.
I want to talk to him, and I would invite him to a party. But would I have a benefit or an event that had some kind of financial stuff attached to it, and invite him as a guest speaker and pay him? I don't think I would do that, because there's too much discomfort around it. That he could do his teshuva another way. It's like you said, he could maybe volunteer for CCAP, or he could volunteer in some organization
down in Texas where he lives,
and
or
that
wherever.
Would be doing community service. That's
right. And I can see that. I mean, the man, the problem that I have with Lance Armstrong, and how do we go from Ineos to Lance Armstrong? Anyway, the problem that I have with Lance Armstrong is this man single-handedly. He single-handedly created probably the best televised presence of world cycling to the United States.
Yes.
Of anyone who's ever, I mean, Greg LeMond was up there. He definitely did a lot, but, you know, Greg LeMond was only, he wasn't, it was still young. It was still in its infancy.
But if people
Lance did it, he brought cycling to the U.S. public.
He was a
household name.
If people didn't know any other names, they knew the name Lance Armstrong. It's true.
And it's
a huge disappointment.
Upon getting all these people all geared up on Lance Armstrong this, Lance Armstrong that, think about how many little kids maybe started racing bicycles because of Lance Armstrong.
Right.
And then he goes and pulls this garbage.
It was a huge disappointment,
and it just that just I mean and he the did thing he is, did the he probably was the most influential man on building U.S. cycling in the United States, and also the most influential man on ruining
on
it
trashing it
at
yes.
the same time,
because cycling has a tenuous position. I was called out on Facebook the other day. I was riding my bike behind some cyclists, and they were riding two abreast, and it was hard to get around them. Shouldn't they be?
Were they riding their bike or driving their car?
The person that was behind them,
yeah,
that was driving a car.
Right.
And they
right.
were, yeah, and so they were complaining about these people being on the road. And there were other people who commented, said that riding two abreast is not allowed in Connecticut. And that's not true.
That's not exactly true.
That's not true.
You can check your statutes.
It may be
on
true
that.
In
there's
right.
200 feet of view front and rear. It's legal,
right?
And, or it was the last I had checked,
right?
And
but anyway, so your average person is irritated by cyclists because we're in their way. So you have cycling as a tenuous position. It doesn't nearly have the same position that football does in the United States. And of course, football,
right.
they are doping all the time,
mm-hmm.
and they get kicked out for a game or two.
Right.
And Lance, and that's the other issue I had, that Lance Armstrong was banned from the sport. Now, mind you, Lance Armstrong was banned from the sport because he did all these other terrible things.
Mm-hmm.
These guys had done all the terrible things like Lance, they would probably be banned as well. But football, what happened was, it's like you said, people found out about what Lance had done, and it shamed cycling as a sport because people look down at cycling anyway. Oh, I can't tell you how many people I still hear making fun of people. Oh, look at them. They think they're in the Tour de France. Oh, look at them. They're wearing Lycra. Oh, they're wearing bicycle clothes. Oh, they're in my way. Oh, why aren't they on bike paths? Oh, bikes shouldn't be on the road. I still hear stuff like that. And so that attitude is still out there. And you don't hear, oh, football players shouldn't play. Oh, football players, they shouldn't wear those knee pads. Oh, look at those shoulder pads they wear. Oh, you don't hear stuff like that. So there's a prejudice against cycling. And then when Lance Armstrong did that, your average person who doesn't ride a bike turned their nose up at cycling altogether. They're certainly not going to turn their nose up at football altogether, but they're going to turn their nose up at cycling. So that was Lance. You're right. Lance did a lot of harm to the optics of cycling and to the presence of cycling in the United States. And that was a really hard thing.
Yeah.
So for that, not that he should be banned from commentating, but I don't think it would have been my choice. And I was actually watching him up there. I had him on the TV, and I was looking at him going, and I felt uncomfortable.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, you talk about, you know, people getting, penalized for fighting or whatever. Do you know that there were two key riders kicked out of the Tour de France for pushing and shoving?
Oh, yeah, I think I heard
yeah,
something like that.
There's a great video on it if you look it up on
a
online.
Video of them actually pushing each other.
Yeah, they're actually crashing and pushing each other off.
Oy,
it was one of the Jumbo guys and one of the Ineos guys.
Oh, that's too
it was
bad.
Tony, Jumbo Visma's Tony Martin and Team Ineos's Luke Rowe.
Tony Martin.
Yeah, and they had a disagreement of who was allowed to use. The use of the road, and it quickly turned physical. Martin appeared to try to shove Rowe off the road.
What?
Rowe responded by lightly swatting Martin in the face.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, it happens everywhere, guys.
And they were thrown off.
They were thrown out. They were thrown out of the tour for that. And it was just, you know, it's not, if you take a look at it, it's like a little bit of bumping and stuff. And I, quite honestly, I've been in bicycle races. I've seen a little bumping like this before, and I've seen people not get thrown out.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Tour de France organizers did not sympathize as both riders were kicked out for acts of violence. The teams are reportedly thinking of filing a joint appeal through Cycling News, though Cycling News reports that the team organizers would not consider it. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great. Good, good, good. So that also took a key rider out from Ineos this year, which made it that their team just a little bit weaker because of that. So
yeah, it mattered.
Like it mattered.
Mm.
But they still had, with surgical precision, they went out and they won the tour. So anyway, the fallibility of Team Ineos. Let's talk about it just a little bit here. Can you beat them? Do you think you can beat these guys? What happens when Chris Froome comes back? They've got some serious, serious riders. And now with...
Egon.
Oh.
Egon's got a whole life ahead of him. My goodness. He's 22 years old.
He's a puppy.
Isn't he the youngest winner of the Tour de France ever at all?
Yep.
That's so amazing.
He is. And he's the first
Colombian
Colombian to ever win the Tour de France.
That's amazing. So Nairo Quintana never won.
Never won the Tour de France. He won the Tour of Italy. He won the Tour of Spain.
Right.
So he won the Giro and the Vuelta.
Right.
But he has not won. No, he's not won the Tour de France. So anyway, there's a question here as to, are these guys going to continue to be the monster that they are? And if they are the monster that they are, then, are we going to have to, here's the thing. The tour this year was so much more interesting.
It was exciting.
It was
because you didn't know who was going
to
win.
You had no idea if Alaphilippe was going
to
do anything.
Right, up to the last
not.
Minute, you thought it was going to be Alaphilippe, and then it wasn't. And then there was a landslide. When does that ever happen? That was crazy.
It was. It was. And the day that Alaphilippe won the time trial, I went, uh-oh, this kid's got it, because he was wearing the power of the yellow. He's got it. I love him. I love him. He's emotional.
Aww.
He broke down in a number of interviews. He starts crying because he's so emotionally connected to it. I just think he is the best. He wins an award for me. So I guess I've kind of clicked right over to the positive side there. On this one, because I gotta shout out, the unbelievable Julian Alaphilippe. We will never, ever forget this man. We will not forget this man. This guy was incredible.
He may be in yellow next year.
So he's not a Grand Tour rider. Here's why it all happened. Okay, what you have to understand is they let him go early in the race. Because he's nothing. He's not. He's a one-day racer. Maybe a three-day racer. He's got an amazing, amazing climbing style on really steep, nasty, ugly things. The man can climb like the wind. And you could watch him accelerate away in the early stages of the race. And they just let him go. They went, no big deal. Well, a minute and a half later, it was a big deal. Because all of a sudden, he's away. And there, every day, it's like, he won't hold that. And he held it. Oh, the next day. Oh, he won't hold that. No. And then they get to the time trial. And it's like, he's going to get killed in the time trial. They're going to eat him up. Geraint Thomas is going to, he's going to annihilate him. Nope. Didn't happen. What happened is Alaphilippe won the time trial. So he secured his position when he won the time trial, because now we're going into the Pyrenees after that. And went into the Pyrenees and he held his own. And the way he held his own is even when the climbs got critical and they would drop him on the climbs, because he's not a long climber. He's a short climber. He's not a long climber. He's a short climber. So he has these amazing bursts of speed, but he can't sustain it like the Colombian guys can. He just can't do it. Pino is another one. He's a long climber. He's not a short, powerful climber. And we thought he was going to take over. And actually, Alaphilippe, when he was interviewed, said that. Thibaut Pinot. He said that Thibaut Pinot was his
wingman.
Well, no, it was his prediction of who was going to win the Tour de France.
Oh, go on.
But then Thibaut Pinot had a problem with his quad, I think is what
it
was.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I think it was what he blew out his quad. So something happened and he pulled out of the race and he DNF'd.
That's right.
Yeah. So, this tour was just full of what's going to happen tomorrow. It was just a crazy, crazy tour. But,
don't forget the landslide. You've talked about the landslide.
And we were going to get there.
Okay, sorry.
We're going to get there. So there's a great article here. It's the SB Nation. and it says, can there ever be a perfect Tour de France? Two riders from cycling's evil empire will top the podium, but the Tour de France belonged to to Julian Alaphilippe. And it's just
interesting.
And it shows him sitting in the car, in the Quick Step car, and he's just
cycling's evil empire is Ineos. That's not nice.
Yeah. So the beginning of the article says, "I'll never forget Julian Alaphilippe and Thibaut Pinot zooming away together on stage 8 of the 2019 Tour de France. I was in the press room at Saint-Étienne, and Alaphilippe broke away for the finish line with 12 kilometers to go. Pinot saw the move and quickly caught Alaphilippe's wheel. As the two Frenchmen worked together, journalists huddled around televisions watching in awe. Pinot finished second, and Alaphilippe took third. Together, they ignited the tour."
Yeah.
So that was the thing. They let them go, and that became a big deal. That will never happen again. That will never happen.
Because they learned the lesson.
They now know that you can't do that, because the power of the yellow jersey is an amazing thing. So anyway, so now you got, Pinot, and he's in like third place, and Alaphilippe's holding the yellow jersey, and it just got to be, best first week talk tumbled into best tour talk in the second week, when Alaphilippe won the individual time trial and strengthened his grip on the Col de Tourmalet, where he finished second and Pinot won. They were on a trajectory for the perfect finish to what had been the perfect tour, one of which Panache was rewarded. The more Alaphilippe and Pinot attacked, the more self-assured they seemed and the faster they went. Alaphilippe was this tour's emblem. His swashbuckling attitude, his musketeer goatee injected verve into the race. One of the world's best stage racers, he was nonetheless left out of the discussion of the yellow jersey contenders before the tour. And yet, there he was, outdueling everyone and smiling. Always, always smiling. So anyway, I read this and I got a little teary when I read it. I thought it was really cool. So there you go. This is Julian Alaphilippe. The Wall Street Journal wrote this article. Love this. The Wall Street Journal, get this. Julian Alaphilippe didn't win this Tour de France, but he brought the fireworks. The French rider's panache, combined with challenging high-altitude course and emergence of a young champion, made this the most exciting tour in recent memory. And that's basically it. The Wall Street Journal wrote an article about this. They talked all about what this young kid brought to the tour. France was crazed. For 14 days, this guy was wearing the yellow jersey. 14 days.
France must be out of their minds
now.
You
know there's a €500 bonus for every day you carry the tour.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So anyway, it just the idea that someone from France could get this kind of attention. Good for the French. I like it. And I like French fries, too. Oh, that was such a bad...
That has nothing to do with
anything. I know.
It
was a terrible, stupid comment that some politician made years ago.
He did?
Yeah. Wow. Well, anyway. I was just kidding. Anyway, so that's Julian Alaphilippe. I am just so, enamored by this guy, because he made me love cycling again at an even deeper level. I was getting bored with the tour. I got to watch 7 years of U.S. Postal going out and surgically taking apart every team out there.
Because what do you mean by surgically? What does that mean?
Meaning that they sat down with the playbook and they basically had a plan and they followed the plan to perfection. And they dismantled anything that ever wanted to combat with them. They bought the best riders. They did the same thing. I mean, it's the same playbook that Ineos has been doing, or Sky was doing this for years. They wait until the last couple of days, and then they put the hammer down and they walk away with the tour.
So that's kind of like when you're on the group ride and you have all these people who see, like you're leading the ride and you have all these people sitting in.
The wheel suckers.
Yeah, so yeah. And then at the very end of the ride, they do, you know, when we're on 203, we're almost back at North Windham School, they put the hammer down and they drop everybody like in the last, you know, 2 miles.
Yeah, like well, that. You know, I guess that's kind of an interesting comparison, but yeah.
Ineo sat in, and then at the very last minute, they said, "Okay, Bernal,
okay, you're time to go now. Time to go now."
Yeah.
And Garrett, you're going to take him with you, and you're going to be second this year.
But they must have also
calculated it. I mean, it was playbook. It was perfect.
But they also, I mean, in order for them to be able to do that, Bernal and Thomas both had to have a certain amount of, like, their times still had to be sufficiently low for them to be able to catch it.
They were down a minute and a half.
Yeah.
Minute and a half to 3 minutes is what they were down.
Right.
But they knew they could do it.
Yeah.
And this kid, this Bernal kid, oh, my God. He is, what is he? 21, 22 years
Two.
Old? 22 years mm-hmm. old. 22 years old.
Unbelievable.
He was wearing the white jersey for the entire tour as the best young rider. And we're watching him, and he's just this little Colombian climber, you know, and the Colombian. I said 3 days before the Tour de France came on, I said, this tour is going to be won by either a Colombian or a Frenchman.
You did say that.
I did say that.
Yeah.
I called that.
You were safe.
And I was
that was
pretty,
a safe
I
bet.
Was fairly safe. Fairly safe.
There are good odds on
but,
that.
But, you know, I mean, could have been an Italian. It could have been anybody. I mean, if you take a look at, there were some, you know, the Jumbo team has got some interesting stuff coming up in the future.
Yeah.
Movistar. Movistar won the tour as far as team prize. They were number one. Ineos was third.
Right, team-wise.
So that's a story in itself right there, is that they were third team-wise. So, you know,
Movistar
whatever.
Had issues because Movistar Nairo had, is leaving.
There's some other stuff going on, too, I think. I haven't really dug real deep in it, but there was definitely some stuff. But they won the team. They won the team prize. They were the fastest
Movistar
team.
Movistar did. Yeah,
Movistar mm-hmm. did. So, anyway. But here's my favorite. Alaphilippe awarded Tour de France's most combative rider.
Right.
Award. And boy, he held the jersey for 14 days, which is unbelievable. The most combative rider, if you're an American sports fanatic, then you would know that is the most valuable player award. If you're someone who you know, follows American sports. This is like a huge award. He wore the jersey for 14 days. And then he ended up losing it 2 days before the finish in Paris. And then we're going to talk about that in a minute, too, because that's just another crazy thing. Alaphilippe, I got to tell you, I've seen riders over the years. I've been following bike racing for a very, very long time. And there's not many people that can descend like that guy can descend. He uses every last millimeter. And I will say his tires are on the edge of the gravel when he's going around switchbacks.
And there's no guardrails, and you can see straight down.
And he's precise, and he's confident, and I do believe that if he had been given the chance to catch back up, that he would have kept the yellow jersey for at least one more day.
Well, go ahead and talk about what actually happened.
Anyway, so what happened? Okay, we will never see anything like that. Well, we won't see this
because
again.
Climate change.
Because things happen. Things definitely happen. So what happens? There was a here it is over here. So on stage 19. Big climbs, nasty, three of them.
And that was Friday, July 26th.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Stage 19 of the tour was aborted due to severe weather, including snow, hail, and mudslide covering part of the course. Now, bear in mind.
And flooding.
It's in the 80s and low 90s.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
And a hailstorm came in.
Yes.
Okay. So what happens?
Which can happen.
Which can happen because, you know, you get a severe thunderstorm, but there is no climate change. You get a severe thunderstorm that comes in. I made a political comment. and it dumped like many inches of hail onto the road.
Right.
So much so that they had a payloader out there.
Hail is something that happens in hot weather, though. It's
when you have confusion
of hot and cold weather in the upper atmosphere. That's how hail happens.
So if you click on that site that I put in there, mudslide ruins part of the Tour de France, watch the video. It's pretty impressive. I'll see if I can put this up on Facebook later. But they're standing there watching the side of the hill just crumble,
yes,
and slide
right.
down, and then there
and
was
people had to run
out of the way because all of a sudden there's like a mudslide, and it was like, you know, boulder type rocks too, you know, pretty
yeah.
good sized rocks, and it completely covered the road over. But they had a payloader out moving the hail out of the way,
right.
And it was like a river going down the road because
yes.
it was melting so fast because it's
right.
85 degrees, 90
right.
degrees out,
yes.
and it's just melting. So the tour organizers, which everyone now says, although there were some, you know, riders that were obviously very upset by it, everyone now says that the organizers made the right call, that
right.
that was the right thing to do. And then when you take a look at the mudslide that happened right after, I mean, they would have gone around a corner and there would have been a wall about 3 feet tall of impassable.
There could have been a lot of injuries.
There could have been
dive bombing.
Because you dive those corners
sure.
at you know anywhere from you know 40 to 50 miles per hour. It definitely was the right
they
call.
Wanted them to be sufficiently slowed down so they wouldn't have been hurt by that.
But at the time, Egan Bernal of Colombia was in the lead when the race was called off. The organizers decided the best solution would be to award the racers their times as they reached the top of Lizarraine.
And people argued that they should have made the cutoff lower, like partway down the mountain.
Yeah, and that was an argument, and because Alaphilippe was probably putting the hammer down at that point.
Of
he
course.
Could very much have been catching up.
Yeah.
But, you know, Geraint Thomas says that Bernal would have put even more time on him, according to his interview. So, you know, everybody's got an opinion. But so there were no official winners on that particular stage since Bernal was in the lead. Tomorrow, the next day, he would be wearing the yellow jersey that denotes a cyclist who earned first place in the previous stage. And also, he had over 2 minutes on Alaphilippe at that point.
Whoa.
Or right around 2 minutes mm-hmm. on the climb, because this kid can climb. Oh, my God, can this kid climb.
Right.
And so,
well,
and
he weighs 2 pounds,
did.
And he grew up in Colombia.
Yeah, he's a little guy. He's a total little guy. I don't have his stats in front of me, but
he grew up
breathing
7,000-foot air.
The other catch to it is a 78.5-mile course, so it's a short course also.
Ah, yeah.
But would that give Alaphilippe a chance to catch up? We'll never know. We will never know. But, you know, that it's done. It's a done deal.
Yeah, we're still going to celebrate Alaphilippe. Alaphilippe
rankings after stage 19 were Egan Bernal of Colombia having the win. Julian Alaphilippe was 48 seconds behind. Geraint Thomas was a minute and 16 behind. And Steven Kruiswijk was from Jumbo was 128 behind. And then Emmanuel Buchmann of Germany was 155 behind. And then there was a big jump to Mikel Landa, which was 435 behind. So, but they were still pretty close to one another. Everybody was still pretty close. So, anyway, too bad on the mudslide. Bummer,
I'm going to do a mini rant.
Bummer.
That we don't have enough coverage for the cable that we pay for, and we don't have enough coverage of the Tour de France. I couldn't come home from staffing the Thread City Sentry and watch the final stage of the Tour de France because it wasn't on.
I know.
It was
I
only
know.
On in the morning, and
yeah.
it wasn't on in the
yeah,
evening.
Yeah, NBC Sports has a couple of little slap arounds they need to be dealing with here.
Yeah.
The Lance Armstrong thing and then that. You know, their weekend coverage should be more intense than their weekday coverage.
Because people are home and they want to watch
the weekday coverage, they're on three times during the day.
Yes.
Morning, noon, night.
But weekend stuff happens. And especially the final stage. Wouldn't I like to come home from my summer day and watch the Tour de France?
And the funniest thing is back when I first started seeing U.S. broadcasting of the Tour de France, it was CBS that did it.
Ah.
And CBS Sports. And there was, you know, you waited until the weekend, and, you know, I was burying myself into the Boston Globe and the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times trying to get results. I used to put them up in my bike shop on a chalkboard, and I put it in the front window, and I'd have these old European types come by the store, and they'd tap, tap, tap on my window. And I'd look out, you know, because I'm working on bikes. It's the middle of July. I mean, I'm busy. And I'd look out, and they would go. And they'd nod, and they'd stick their thumb up. And it was really funny because every day they come by to check the results.
Oh, did you tell everybody about this?
I didn't tell them about that, but I will tell them in just a second.
Okay.
At the end.
It's a surprise.
At the end. It's a surprise. It's a surprise. It's a visual, so I have to explain it. But I will explain it. At the end, Alaphilippe says, quote unquote, "I want to thank everyone who supported me this tour. I've been carried along by the madness of the yellow jersey. A big, big thanks from the bottom of my heart. As I said, whatever the result, I wouldn't have any regrets. And today, I don't have any regrets. I have everything."
Aw, what a good guy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. That's it. He's not Lance Armstrong.
No. No, but few are.
He is so not. So we just got through the positive side, believe it or not. We're still, you know, cranking along here because there was just so much to talk about that was positive about the tour this year. It was the most exciting bicycle racing I have seen in decades. And I hope it continues. I hope that I see a lot of young riders that show a lot of possibilities. And, you know, if they can start taking a look at the playbook that these other teams are doing, this is a team sport. This is, everybody says, oh, you ride a bike, that's an individual sport. Nope, not at all. When you're talking bike racing, we're talking team sport. It's a big deal, and the strategies are going to get more and more intense as we go on, I think. But
I have a song for you.
Okay.
And, oh, take my love, take it down. Oh, climb a mountain and turn around.
Oh, jeez, it's Fleetwood Mac.
And if you see my reflection in the snow-covered hills, well, the landslide will bring it down.
Oh, my God.
And if you see my reflection in the snow-covered hills, well, the landslide will bring it down.
And it sure did, didn't it? And it sure did.
I don't know why people weren't, like, playing the song.
Yeah, they should have been.
This is classic.
So, To bring up this visual that Fran is commenting on, what you have to understand, you know, we are not Facebook Live here today, otherwise we could show you this, but what Fran did for the Tour de France before we went off to the last Farm to Fork Fondo, she went to the nail salon, and she had her nails done, because Fran gets her nails done. She had her toenails done and her fingernails done, and the thumb is the French flag. That's what she had painted on her thumb. The forefinger is the yellow jersey. The second finger is the climber's jersey. Okay, the polka dot jersey. The next finger down is the green jersey for the points jersey, and the last one is the white jersey for the youngest rider.
And it's all chipping, and I'm hoping to get to the salon today to have it re-upped.
Yeah, but it was clever. It was definitely very clever. Well, she got a lot of comments on it. Which
I didn't thought Tyler
cool.
was so excited.
Yeah, I know. So, the maintenance minute. This is how far we are. We're almost done with the show, and I'm just getting the
That's okay. We were just
That's
talking
okay.
about one of the most exciting Tour de France in years.
A lot to talk about. So, the tire boot. This brings up our good friend Dave Wahlberger rescued someone this weekend. We had a flat tire on the ride, and it was not a small puncture. It was a slice, and the slice of the casing must have been a big piece of glass, cut the casing all the way through. And essentially, the rider is screwed because this was not a dollar bill repair. Well, it would have been a dollar bill repair. It would have just required $3 or $4. That's all.
Ooh.
But it was the casing was badly damaged. And so there is something called a tire boot, which if you go to our friends at Park Tool Company, they will sell you an emergency tire boot. And it's the fastest and easiest, most secure way to cut a worn tire or sidewall. It's called the TB-2 because everything has a a number with it, with Park Tool. It's a super strong, pressure-sensitive adhesive that assures the boot stays in place in any tube tire, road or mountain, high or low pressure. And it's a true ride saver. And so anyway, they have these, and you basically peel them and stick them on the inside of your tire, and it's just a really, really tough piece of material that keeps the tube from blowing out from through the hole that you have. It'll get you home. It is not something that you put on and then ride for, you know, 5 or 6 weeks before you get a new tire. You go home, you get a new tire. But it will get you home, so it's kind of a cool thing. Now, if you are from the old school of Mr. Wahlberger and myself, then what you have instead is you take your oldest, well, you take an old tire. Let's say you had a tire like that, that got a really bad slice, and it's basically ruined. So you take that tire, and you cut a section out of the tire, and you cut the bead off of it too. And you can do this with a good pair of like metal shears or you know, wire cutters or whatever. But anyway, you basically make a casing to fit inside the casing. You can't leave it there for very long because it will eventually irritate the tube and you'll get a flat from it because there's a ridge that it creates in the inside. And so it's going to get you home. And that's what this is all about. The ones that Park Tool makes are probably a little slicker because they don't bulge out as much, but you can make it out of an old tube. I mean, an old tire. So if you have an old tire that, you can dedicate to this because it's just going to the scrap pile anyway, then you cut this short section. And I'm not talking about anything really big. It only needs to be about 2 inches long, and that's about it. And you just put it in, and it serves as a casing for your tire, which has been so badly damaged that you could not be able to get home. The other thing, of course, is the old dollar bill trick. And if you've got a small hole, you can fold over a dollar bill, U.S. currency, 5, 6, 7, 8 times, whatever it is, and just put it in place and then put the tube in the inside and inflate, and you'll find that that works really good too. This one would have required more than $1 because it was a big slice in her tire. Aww. But it got fixed, and that's my maintenance tip of the week is booting your tire and what you can do to do that. And you can go also, if you want to learn how to do it or if you want to see how it's done, you can go to YouTube and you can watch a little video there and it'll show you how that works. So anyway, the tire boot. Last little thing, since we didn't get to talk anymore, we did talk a lot about stage 19 and all. The Tour de France. I have to ask, are you suffering from Tour de France depression?
Why?
It's over.
Yes.
It's over. It's the end of July. Yes. The Tour de France is over. Don't worry. There's more bike racing coming, and we will have more to watch.
That's not the problem. When the Tour de France is over, it means the summer is...
That's what Fran doesn't like.
We're deep into the summer.
It's a timing thing. Yeah,
yeah, it means that it's almost August, and soon it's going to be cold.
So if you're watching day after day after day, and you're talking about it to all your friends, and you're chatting on the phone...
Getting your nails done.
Or you're texting back and forth and all of a sudden, it's done.
It's done. Not only is it done, I didn't get to see the last stage because of the crummy coverage.
Right, right. Yeah. So anyway, there it is. That's it. That's it. The tour was won by Caleb Ewan. Caleb Ewan won second Tour de France.
Caleb
right?
Ewan. He won the second. Yeah. He won the second Tour de France stage.
Yeah.
So right. I think
that
you should.
Stage,
I think
yeah.
what you should do is yeah. you should announce the all of the winners.
And I had that here, and now
yeah.
I am, there it is, right here. It should be right here. So the finals, Egan Bernal seals the yellow jersey as Caleb Ewan triumphs in Paris. Okay, so he won the Champs-Élysées, you know, the big parade. So that was the final then. And
could you know who was number two?
For overall classification?
Yeah, for the GC.
Yeah, the GC. It was Egan Bernal was Team Ineos, 82 hours, 57 minutes. 1 minute and 11 seconds behind him was Geraint Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Third place was Steven Kruszewicz mm-hmm. from Team Jumbo-Visma.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth was Emmanuel Buchmann from Bora. cycling 156 back on fourth place. And then fifth place, Julian Alaphilippe, four minutes and 5 seconds down. And then right after that was Michael Landa, Mikel Landa from Movistar, at 4:23. Rigoberto Urán from EF Education First, 5:15, was seventh. Nairo Quintana was eighth, 5:30. Alejandro Valverde was also from the Movistar team, 6:12 down. You can see a lot of Movistar. That's why they won the.
Does everybody say Movistar? Isn't it
Movistar?
Movistar? Isn't it a Spanish cell phone company?
It's Movistar.
Movistar.
Yes. Movistar, right. Yes. So anyway, yeah, I do have the team results here. And then, of course, points classification. Peter Sagan won the points classification. Second was Caleb Ewan. Watch this kid. He's fast. He's Australian. He's little tiny guy that moves a bike. So, and then as we go up here, we look at the mountains classification. Roman Bardet from Crédit Agricole or AGL2.
Nice.
Yeah. So they got a Frenchman who won the polka dot jersey. It's very nice.
Yes. Do you know that Egan Bernal was second?
And he was second. Yeah.
Boy, he got the
And then
the
young rider, it was Egan Bernal.
Bernal, of course.
Amazing. Yeah. Just amazing. And so team classification was Movistar, Trek, Segafredo. Team Ineos
was
third.
Yeah.
And then by a fair amount, actually, Movistar really did a great job this year.
Yeah.
Education First was fourth, and Bora Hengskov. Was fifth.
And then the most combative was Julian Alaphilippe.
Yeah, and then the most combative was Julian Alaphilippe. Mm-hmm. So that's it. That's it.
Good.
That's all I got. I got to finish this up. We're going to run through this super quick. I got a little bit of a calendar here to talk about just to bring us up to date here about what's going on. Remember the Tuesday night bicycle racing. If you're all enthused about bike racing right now, remember that the bike races are still going on in East Hartford. Check with BikerEdge.com. Great training races to get you involved in cycling. Go to BikerEdge.com to check out the calendar page for everything else that's going on, too. This is all done. The George Street Challenge was last weekend. So was the Thread City Century. Big shout out to all those that volunteered for the Thread City Century. We really appreciate everything you did. That was really helpful. And coming up very soon, we have another Farm to Fork Fondo, which is going to be out at the Finger Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which is
hopefully
cool.
It won't pour on us.
Yeah, and I talked to Jim just this morning on my way up here. We'll tell you about that in a minute.
Okay.
The Steeplechase Bike Tour, Saturday, August 17th.
A week later.
Yeah, a week later.
France going to Oregon
miles,
in between.
62 miles, 50 miles, 35 miles, 20 miles, and a 5-mile walk. And also the Ashford Adventure Ride, a mixed terrain gravel grinder on Saturday, September 7th, 2019. You can check them out online at ashfordmetriccentury.wordpress.com. Okay, that's what I got. My name is Pedalin' Ron. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch.
Hi.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And you can also listen to more past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, and we will have a guest next week, shout out to Billy, send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs.